Today on the show, we're in the familiar sands of Arrakis, but we're throwing dice, keeping track of damage, and making our own story in an Imperium chock full of dangers.
Welcome to Gamjabar, your guide to the iconic world of Dune. We'll be exploring the themes, philosophies, and characters found in the sandy depths of this vast universe, from Frank Herbert's groundbreaking novels to the adaptations on film and TV, and, well, today, board games. My name is Leo.
And my name's Abu.
And today, oh man.
Oh boy.
We had the absolute honor, the pleasure of chatting with the fine folks over at Modiphius Entertainment.
That's right.
They created the RPG, the Dune RPG called Dune Adventures in the Imperium, which is sort of like Dungeons and Dragons, but obviously way fucking cooler because it's Dune. Obviously.
Yeah.
Come on.
Hell yeah. Oh my gosh. It's incredible. And you know what? We were not the ones to reach out to Modiphius at all.
Right.
This connection was actually made for us through a listener. So we want to shout out Ori Kagan, who reached out to us and mentioned that he had worked recently with Modiphius. He'd mentioned the podcast to them. And if we wanted, he can make that connect for us and we could get that interview. And so we did. So thank you, Ori, for jumping in and opening this door for us to chat with Modiphius. It was a lot of fun.
Now, from Modiphius, we were joined by Chris Birch and Andrew Peregrine. And Chris is the founder of Modiphius. Andrew Peregrine is the lead writer for this project and has worked on a number of other things for them. But in the interview that you're going to hear today, you'll have us, Chris, and Andy for the first chunk of the conversation. And then Chris had to step out and we continued on with Andrew.
That's right. And before we cut to that interview, Leo, we got to take care of one thing.
Right.
Housekeeping.
Housekeeping.
So let's talk spoilers for today's episode. Our conversation with Chris and with Andrew covered mainly the first book. So for today's episode, consider your spoiler warning for just the first book. If you've read Dune, then you're safe and you can go ahead and continue on with today's episode.
Now, if you haven't already done so, consider joining our Patreon at patreon.com/gamjabar. It is the best way to support the show and allows us to give this show the time and attention it demands.
And of course, as always, we have to shout out our two Kwisatz Haderach level patrons.
Yep.
Case Aiken and Nate Hyde. Boy, these guys rolled D20s.
Nat 20s.
On their generosity yeah. rolls. Or is it nat 20s?
They rolled D20s and they got nat 20s.
Nat 20s. That's how RPG games work. You're right. No. Either way, 20s all around on their generosity scores. Thank you to Nate. Thank you to Case. And of course, thank you to all of our listeners who tune in every single week.
You'll be able to tell that Abu and I are avid D&D fans, RPG fans throughout this episode. You can email us at gamjabarpodcast@gmail.com if you've got other ideas for episodes, questions you'd like us to answer. Hit us up there, gamjabarpodcast@gmail.com.
And finally, last bit of housekeeping, another great way to support the show and look good while you do so is to check out our merch. We have a merch store at gamjabarshop.com. We got t-shirts, we got prints, and we got this cute little enamel pin. You're going to want it all.
Indeed. Well, as we mentioned, our guest today that you're going to hear in just a few minutes is Modiphius Entertainment. And to give you some background, they are a role-playing game and tabletop game publisher based out of London. And honestly, they've got a bonkers track record of just cool games. You know, they have a Skyrim adventure game. They've got a Cthulhu role-playing game. They've got Dune Adventures of the Imperium. They've got Kung Fu Panda. They've got
Hell
Fallout.
Yeah.
It's nuts. And when we found out we'd have a chance to talk to them, we prepared a conversation around the game. And then, of course, we had some kind of fun, pointed questions for Andrew that we got to in the latter half of the episode.
Yeah, they're definitely as big Dune nerds as we are. So the conversation was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
One more thing I guess we should talk about, Leo, is Dune's messy canon.
Yeah. Have
I feel
heard?
Like we have to talk about this all the time. Have you heard about it?
Have you heard about it?
So to be 100% clear, as many of our listeners know, here on the podcast, we stick primarily to Frank's own words, the original six books,
right,
and the Dune Encyclopedia. The Modiphius game, because they worked with the Herbert Estate, takes into account all of Brian's works as well. That obviously differs from how we look at Dune lore on this podcast.
Right.
Okay. I think we've set the tone for the interview. We've explained who, what, where, when, and how. So now all we got to do is hit play. Before we get into the interview, we're going to take a short break. But don't go anywhere, folks. We'll be back with Andrew and Chris from Modiphius right after this. Welcome back, everyone. Now, one final note before we start this interview. You'll notice that the audio quality is not up to our usual high standard, and there are a couple of logistical reasons for that. It was an international call, we're on Zoom, not everyone had a mic, so we just wanted to let you know that audio quality is a bit rough. You might hear audio cut in and out a little bit, but the content of the interview itself is excellent, so we hope you enjoy. Like Leo said, we're going to do like a whole intro and outro to this episode separately. We wanted to use this time as much as possible with you. So let's just get right to the questions. First one is very easy. Chris, Andrew, tell us what Dune Adventures in the Imperium is.
Well, it is everything. It is the most incredible game and the most incredible adventures you could possibly have. How long do you want to go on about how great the setting is? Because I could do this till doomsday today. If you want me to pick favorites for it, some of the things I love, the things that stand out, not just as a science fiction setting, but as a role-playing setting as well, is the level of far future. I mean, we are in a time for humanity beyond, further away from us than we are from the pyramids, 20, 30,000 years in the future, even in one of the early eras. But what I also love is that mankind, or humanity rather, hasn't really changed that much. We're still being unpleasant to each other. We're still doing horrible things to each other. And I love that sort of shift that, you know, humanity's kind of the same. And then, of course, it has two things in it particularly that are very rare in science fiction, is that whilst it is a very highly technical setting, you've got, you know, folding spaceships, all kinds of laser weapons and things, shields even, almost invisible technology. It is so advanced. But at the same time, we haven't lost things like religion is still a very powerful force, which I always find a very interesting thing. It's usually sort of written out of a lot of science fiction things. And of course, you've got the no robots and no computers, which is usually the basis of most science fiction. And to create a setting where you go, oh, no computers. They're like, no what? It's just amazing how that works together. And those things just make it a unique setting. I've not seen the like of it anywhere else. And it just offers so many other opportunities for characters, adventure, and everything.
Especially for a role-playing game where you get to play that role. Now, Chris, I wanted to ask, so Modiphius has worked with some like big IPs in the past. Whether it's, I was looking at the list, right? Cthulhu was your first one with, like, that's huge. And Since then, it looks like you've tackled Skyrim, Dishonored, for video game fans, that's huge. Kung Fu Panda, the board
Amazing.
Game, like,
for me
that's
personally,
incredible.
That's huge.
We have huge Kung Fu Panda fans here on Dom Jabbar, canonically. Tell us about not only maybe how those sorts of connections get made, like how do those projects end up on your doorstep, but specifically with the Herbert Estate, like how did this begin for Modiphius?
I had a t-shirt company before called Joystick Junkies, and we did a lot of licensing of video games brands to make clothing. So I already knew the kind of hoops you have to jump through to get a big license. When I started Modiphius, I knew this agent who represented various things, and she said to me, "Oh, you know, would you be interested in Mutant Chronicles?" And I was like, "Wow," because that was like this really cool kind of gonzo, crazy, cool sci-fi setting from the 90s that was, you know, had bigger shoulder pads than games, you know, 40K, and was just mental and really fun, and like this had this like diesel punk aesthetic. And I was like, "Yeah, let's do it." So that was like our first proper license.
And so how did that come about for Doom? Did you approach them? Did they approach you?
So yeah, the agent approached us, said, "Were we interested?" And we kind of helped put a deal together where Battlefront got involved to do the rest of the tabletop games, because it was too big for us. We were like, "Look, we'll just do the RPG and help out there." And the RPG has obviously been big enough for us. And that's kind of been our speciality, except we also do miniature games now. You know, half the business is dedicated to war games now, which, you know, is a relatively new thing in the last 3 or 4 years. But yeah, so it came to us because we were a known quantity. People knew we did beautiful looking books, that we could probably, we were big enough to take it on. We were big enough to give it the kind of launch it needed as a major, major sort of entertainment launch.
I'm curious, what is actually both of your relationships with Doom? Were you fans before this contract came in, or was this something you had to dive into once you knew you were going to work on this project?
Oh, no, I was a big fan beforehand. One of the reasons I'm working on it is because I wouldn't stop now. but as soon as I heard he had the license, "You've got Dune? Really? You've got Dune? I want it now. I'll write the back of the book and that'll be it. I don't care." And then I ended up that, you know, they needed someone to fill this role. And I was like, "Yes, please, please, God." I mean, it wasn't, I was begging, there were tears. It really wasn't pretty.
Andy knows where a few of the bodies are buried as well, so I couldn't say no.
But yeah, so I filled up with loads of the books and loved all the, you know, films and the sci-fi series and everything. It had always been something of a dream of mine to work on something quite this big. So it was also just, it's very much a dream come true for me to work on not just Dune, but a really big license, and a license that Modiphius has really put its weight behind.
Chris, what about you? Were you a longtime Dune fan?
I read it back in the midst of time when I was a kid, and I would help my grandfather on a bookstore, secondhand bookstore in Coventry, big city in England. And I would go there on Saturdays, and I'd come home paid in bags, shopping bags full of books and comics. So Dune was one of those amongst all the other greats. Dune was one of those books. And of course, I remember the movie, good old Sting. his performance, which was awesome. And so, you know, I've always been a fan of, you know, I kind of put Dune in that sort of science fantasy arena. So, it's been an interesting journey. But I always go for stuff that I love. I mean, we don't tend to work on things that I don't particularly care about. But I also think it's really important to bring, surround yourself with a team of people who care about it even more than you. So that's why, you know, we've got people like Andy on board and others who really care about the world even more so. So that's been great.
That's excellent. And honestly, you're totally right. It's like, I think there's a lot of gatekeeping in fandoms, and to be like, "Well, you don't have all 6 books memorized, or you don't have all the sequels." It's like, it doesn't, if you love the thing, that's great. Then you put the people in place to make sure it's a quality thing.
Yeah.
And it's also, they sort of almost come back to gatekeeping. I remember I worked on a Firefly role-playing game, and I was at a convention, and somebody came up to the stand and said, "Oh, I'm interested in this, but you're going to hate me because I haven't seen any of the things." And I said, "Hey, you, I'm jealous of you. You've got a series and a movie to watch. Mm-hmm. You know who I think I would kill to have a whole series and a movie? You have all of, my God, I wish you to see it from the first. No, please, if this helps you nudge towards it, you've got so much awesome stuff ahead of you, and welcome to the group. It's like, I don't understand why anyone would want to keep anyone out of the stuff that we can share. It's just, it makes no sense to me.
That's a really great point. I love that perspective. Think of all the books they have to read. Ah, it's so exciting.
Yeah,
absolutely. Now, for Chris, from a high level, kind of looking organizationally, as you were working with the Herbert Estate on this book series, on this role-playing game, did working with Legendary differ in any significant ways from working with, say, DreamWorks for Kung Fu Panda or on the James Bond property coming up? Was it different in any way, the same?
No, I mean, most of them are the same in that at the beginning, they're wary because they don't know how much you know about the brand and how much, how authentic you're going to be. We always sell ourselves on being, you know, some of the more authentic role-playing games of properties like this. But at the beginning, they tend to be a bit wary. And then after you've submitted, you know, a certain amount of content, they gradually get to understand that you know what you're doing and that you care as much about it as they do, and you know enough to do a good job. So you know, things get a bit easier.
Yeah, I mean, this is the thing. A lot of I think some people think that these big companies, or when they have these huge licenses or big movies, that it's some sort of soulless corporation, and it's more our discovery that the reason these people are trepidatious is not because it's so much about money, but because they love these things too. I mean, these are the creators and the inventors of these incredible worlds, and they don't just, you know, they love this and they want to make sure know that we love these things too.
Well, along those lines then, Andrew, I'm curious, working on the RPG, being such a big fan, did working within the constraints of the lore and the universe, did that make it easier, or were there some significant challenges when trying to build this RPG around a universe that's so dense lore-wise?
In one sense, it's where we're lucky with Dune is we could do 20,000 years worth of history in half a galaxy and still not come close to the canon. it is so vast. So if anything, the challenge here is to try and give an overview of this immense, detailed, cool setting, and yet still for people who don't know it. So because a lot of people might pick up a book, I mean, say we've got a 360-page book, a lot of people don't pull that off the shelf and go, that looks scary. And you get into the, you know, and you've got this huge movie by come out, and that people think, oh, is this too big? So one of the main things we've had to try and do is not simplify it, obviously, because that's where the fun is, but try and present it in such a way that people can go, oh, I can get a handle on this now. I see where you're going. I see what the important parts are, and then draw them into that world. So it's kind of like offering a hand to take people inside it. And once they start, you know, then let them walk around in it and see, you know, what sparks their imagination and sparks the potential for adventure. And that's where we are so lucky with Dune, is it offers such a great, huge playground that we can treat the canon with the respect it actually absolutely needs, but also give you so much extra adventure possibility as well, which is what makes it a great role-playing setting.
Yeah. I was going to say, as Abu and I explore kind of third, like even secondary and tertiary characters, we keep accidentally pitching HBO miniseries because there are so many fantastic little stories that happen off page where you're like, I want to live with the smugglers for a few years. I want to be in one of those houses that's floating above the planet waiting to see what happens. So right. And in a lot of ways, Dune Adventures in the Imperium gives people that opportunity to be characters. I'll also say to your point, Chris, I have very subtly placed two of the collector's editions behind me here. I will say that I bought them, again, I personally haven't even played a role-playing game in years, but I was like, for the art, for the quality of this book, for just the beauty of the product, and my love of Dune, of course, it's incredible.
Thank you. I mean, it's great. Timothy Chalamet loved them so much. He was putting them in the backgrounds of some of his interviews the press junket tour. I think they didn't have a lot of merchandising around, but he did an Instagram live post where he was raving about the book, which was amazing.
Oh, cool.
But it just shows, if you make good stuff, I would have said a different word then. If you make good stuff, you get noticed, and then people love it, and you know you do well. So I always recommend people just go that extra mile in what you create.
Chris, I know you have to go. Before we lose you, one last question for you. I'm curious how involved the Herbert Estate was. Like, were you able to ask Brian or Kevin to help you write some of these things, or was this primarily your responsibility to handle the details of the book itself?
So we did the synopses go to the estate via the agent and Legendary. And then we get redline comments back from them. And then we do based on that, we write the actual chapters, and then they go in and then they get redline comments back. So they were quite detailed in some of their comments coming back. Sometimes just correcting our spelling, it felt like being at school again. But, the estate are very fussy about certain things, and, you know, it's a bit like Cthulhu Mythos, which is very open. But there's a lot of people who think they know the facts about the Dune universe, and they're not true, you know. And so there's a lot of ingrained learning that sometimes you've got to unlearn with writers and stuff. It's like just because you've read it in this other book doesn't mean it's true, you know.
Does a concrete example of that come to mind just now?
Well, for example, the Dune Encyclopedia that is often banded around isn't all canon. So, and it's, you know, and it was because it was very old and written some time ago, and it's not all technically correct. And so it's just little things here and there you have to be a bit careful about. And also just there's that kind of body of awareness that builds up. And so it's like everyone gets the rules of Monopoly wrong because they don't actually read the rules.
Right.
And just people, yeah, but that's how you play. No, it's not how you play. And it's like just there's those little things that people, and maybe they've picked it up from the movies. It's like, you know, just tiny little details.
Yeah. Yeah. I always have to remind myself that pugs don't exist in the first movie.
Yeah. And this thing as well, they have also been able to answer some of our questions as well. I mean, we try to avoid doing that where we can, because of course they're very, very busy, but they have been really great about answering questions where we'll look at something or one of the writers will come up with, what's this or where does this work? Because there are some things in role playing where we need to ask questions that haven't been necessary to ask in novels. I think it's famous. Right. Someone was looking at with a Star Wars license, someone asked a big question about the Death Star, where are the toilets? Because it was like, there are logistical things you need to look at. And it's,
yeah,
you write about that or put that in the film, but we might need to know things like the day-to-day life of Arakeen or things, because that's where our setting is. And then things that might not be available to us to know yet. So we have an amazing advantage to be able to take those questions to, you know, literally to the estate and say, can you just address this one? And they've been really great at replying to those and giving us some what's really nice definitive answers for some of the settings.
Let's talk about the art a little bit, because I'm really curious how that came together. And I don't know how much you were involved in that, Andrew, but Leo and I, just flipping through the book, are just blown away by the art. It's so good.
And I have to say, actually, I'm probably the worst person to ask. I'm basically in the same place as you. We've had, changed our art director. We had Katya Thomas was our original art director, and she's moved on some awesome things. So we've got Rothio Martin has taken over that position now with some of our later books that are in production. For all the writing we do, and I'd like to think that because I'm part of that part, the writing is very good, but it's that art gives that immediate window into the world.
Right.
And this is one of the very lucky things we've been able to do with the movie and Legendary and the Herbert Estate, is art can be very good, particularly bear in mind we were doing a lot of this before the movie even came out.
Right. Oh, true.
So we did have a sort of style guide with some images from the film that we were obviously couldn't show anyone in any way. I couldn't show my mother or my other half. Even. It's like, no, the laptop is over here. So sometimes seeing a movie come out feels like one big security breach. But it was as a fan, it was just amazing to see all this, some of this stuff. But we were given not the remit that we have to copy the movie. We were told that they would like us to do inspired by the movie, which has been the best of both worlds. It's been phenomenal. So we've had the option for if something isn't in the film, but we need to illustrate that, then we've still been able to do that. And we've been able to put our own look to that we're going to carry on with in the game. And if they change it in the film or they come up with something that looks different, well, we carry on with our one because we are, our artistic world is slightly different. But at the same time, you open a book and it looks a bit like the movie you've just seen.
Yeah.
Which is also important because a lot of people are going to get introduced to Dune with the movie because it's so. Yeah, have a long whole conversation about how good. just enraptured. But it's also when people pull a Dune book off the shelf, they want to open it and see it look like the movie because they may well not have read the books and everything. That's their first introduction, and if it doesn't look the same, they're like, "Oh, I thought I got this. I just saw the film." So we can capture that style, not only because it's just so good and so cool, but we also had the option to put our own spin on things and take it in the direction, which is literally the best of both worlds.
Yeah.
That's excellent. Okay, well, this conversation is basically only half over. We're going to get into some kind of fun stuff, but first we're going to take a quick break. So stick around. We will be right back.
All right, welcome back. Let's continue our chat with Andrew from Odysseus Entertainment. Andrew, we're going to get into some more fun lore questions now. We got the work stuff out of the way. Let's get geeky. Let's get geeky about Dune. I'm curious, as you have play tested the RPG and as you have played your own games, were there any fun original characters that came up? Because the game is built to allow players to design and build and mold their own character. They don't have to play as Duncan Idaho, or they don't have to play as Princess Irulan. They can play as their own character in the universe. Were there any fun ones that came up during your playtesting?
Oh, they've all been amazing. And what I loved seeing on the forums is people showing it, sharing what house they've created and what enemies, things they've done. I mean, my own group, we had a smaller group for things. And it was great, to see a mixture between the two. We had a sort of military style character and an heir to the house character. And of course, they butted heads all the time and things. It's been amazing because, of course, we get to see there's so much opportunity for what you can do and where you can go. I mean, for my money, I've always been a big fan of the Bene Gesserit, but it's also been one of the things I was very conscious of. In this game particularly, is that you've got these things like Swordmasters and Bene Gesserit and Mentats, but I didn't want the, for want of a better term, ordinary characters to get left behind. Because right. It'd be easy to get focused on, I'm going to be one of these faction guys, I'm going to be a face dancer or a Sadakar or whatever, those ones with the cool powers. So we want to make sure that all the characters have the option to have cool powers and interesting things to do. And so we've got all these hordes of talents and things for people. So I'm always just that little bit more excited when someone's done a cool character that isn't one of the iconic ones, because you go, oh, yeah, because that to me is the system working, which is always gives you a nice extra glow to see that.
I was going to say, I really liked in the core rule book, there's this great little passage that says, hey, listen, you don't have to feel pressure to have a balanced team. Like a fun adventure can come out of having five player characters who are all merchants. And like now they're in a situation where these like Arrakis merchants are having to go up against face dancers and Bene Gesserit. And like, they're like, I just sell things, man. I don't know what to tell you. And that could be a really fun adventure. And even reading that little paragraph, I was like, oh, that would be fun. It would be fun to have four medics just trying their best, because those are sometimes the most compelling stories, right?
I mean, we're moving into that with, and you'll see this in our Sand and Dust Arrakis system.
Yeah, yeah.
Is the basic setup, and this will be the same throughout the game generally, is that you are the elite agents of a house. That is your general, because also it's so cool to make your own house up. I mean, this is what I love. If you have, you have similar things in, say, Game of Thrones, but there's only like five major houses and everyone serves those, so you're quite limited. In Dune, you can be, there's huge houses. And I also wanted to do this again where we didn't go, you all start at first level. If you want to be just a new house starting out, who just, you know, minor house, nobody's really heard of them, you've only just gained some power, and you were, that's brilliant. But also I wanted to let people go, you know what, you want to own five planets and be in the same room as the Harkonnen when it comes to who's in charge.
Yeah,
go for it, because Dune is huge. Dune is big. There's enough space for that. The problem is, the bigger you are, the more enemies you have.
Yes.
And the more trouble that you're going to get yourself into. So with a nice balance there for that. So we're always going to base it around that. But we've also added in, as we get to go deeper into the lore, we've got extra campaign options and layers. So it's like you were saying beforehand, in the Arrakis source book, we've got a whole section about if you want to play just smugglers on Dune, or there's another one with merchants on Dune. Right. To also try and inspire a few more adventure ideas, but also suggest to people, you don't always have to do, if Agents of a House isn't the style you wanted to do, if you want to play all Fremen or you want to be spice smugglers, here's the stuff to do that. Here's the toolbox to get you playing the game that you want to play. Because that's essentially what a lot of what we're trying to do with a role-playing game.
Yeah.
Never really about, I mean, we offer you a starting point, but it's never really about telling you, you will play the game this way. And it is always the most wonderful, as a games designer generally, when you see people going off and taking your work and going off into incredible flights with stuff and creating these amazing stories and amazing characters and all kinds of stuff. That is wonderful. I mean, you see these sort of things. It's almost like if you're a novelist, you might not be so happy that people are taking, you know, doing lots of fan fiction over your stuff. If you're a designer, it's completely the opposite.
That's what you want people to be doing, right?
Yeah. You want to see, wow, you took it there, or you did that, or, oh, you printed out those maps, or those are amazing, or, oh, that character, they're fantastic. And plus, of course, you get to see some of the enjoyment that people have firsthand. People get excited. You meet them at conventions. You see them on the forums, people saying, oh, wow, I just had the greatest game ever. That is amazing. That is the best thing.
Well, I was going to say, so Andrew, you're the lead writer for this project, right?
Yeah.
And it sounds like you got to make some pretty big decisions regarding like what's in the core book, what's in kind of in this experience. There are familiar characters like Duncan and Paul and Leto and these other characters, and you can see their skill levels.
Yeah.
Like, that just as a nerd, I'm like, yes, I want to know everyone's skill levels. Like, that's so cool. Now I got to ask, as the lead writer, is that something you decided? Is that who decided the skill metrics out of 8 for these characters?
That was honestly probably the hardest decision I had to make.
Oh boy. That's amazing. Well, we wanted to ask you about some of these characters and some of the skill numbers that they ended up with.
We could be arguing over this.
Yeah, hours. I figured there were probably some arguments on the team as well about like where to rank some characters. So if we can throw some names and numbers at you, we'd love for you to defend your decision here.
Go wild.
Yeah. Okay, so first and foremost, the first one that stuck out to us was Duncan Idaho only has 6 charm, but we know he's perhaps the most fuckable man in Dune.
Speaking for myself, I mean, it's Jason Momoa there, but I'm not sure he's that cute in the, I mean, no disrespect to the actor, but in the brief 3 seconds he's in the Lynch movie, he's necessarily that. I think in the Sci-Fi Channel one, I think he might be a bit older. I can't remember what he might not even be in it. So yeah, I think that one is one we have to come based on the movie.
Yeah,
but there's only, so this is what is also nice with the stats in this. We only have quite a limited range.
Yeah,
right.
So the difference between 1 and 2 is actually reasonably great, and it's actually quite difficult to create. Some of these characters are so amazingly skilled that we can't just give them 10 in it.
Right. Right.
I'm not necessarily a big fan of you must have every character must have their stats all balanced.
Yeah.
Right.
But you do need spotlight balance. Mm. And if there is a differential in power that is so great, characters will take to steal a spotlight.
Yeah.
So you want to have a certain degree of things. So we have saved Gennad Swordmasters for a little bit later on down the line. They're already in process. Right. But they will be, you can play things like high-level Chome directors and all kinds of other very, very powerful characters.
Well, speaking of balance, another character that we noticed who's kind of stacked is Count Fenring. Curious how you approached him. He's got like six and sevens across the board.
Well, I mean, he is, I mean, and more so even in the Brian Herbert, Kevin J. Anderson books, he is terrifyingly good at everything. Uh-huh. So, I mean, I'll stand by those ones. He's an assassin. I mean, he's a Kwisatz Haderach. He's like one step down from Paul, and not a very big step either, in some ways. So, you know what? I think I'll stand by those.
I mean, Frank literally put it in the first book. He could have killed Paul. He had all the faculties necessary to kill Paul and didn't because of their shared kind of brotherhood.
Yeah. Well, thank you for indulging us. We just wanted to grill you a little bit, but frankly speaking, you guys handled the characters really well. And like flipping through them, I was like, yep, that's exactly what Stilgar should be. You know, a lot of them make sense.
Yeah. And I should say for these, that's also, again, as we come back to your foundation, there's no reason you can't change them. There's, you know, it's like we have given you our version. So that if you go, oh, you know what? It would be cool if they ran into Lady Jessica in this game. So I'm going to throw in, oh, I've got a stats. Let's do that now. But if you want to focus on your own game and say, you could all, I mean, a great game would be you're all handmaidens of Lady Jessica, doing sort of Bene Gesserit things on Arrakis and look up the back. That would be really cool. You might want to go, you know what? I'm going to redo her stats. I'm going to give her a bit more. And as time goes on, we will have more abilities and things. And you'll go, oh, actually, that ability we invented two source books later, we should actually give that to Duncan Idaho. Because as you see, he's got none of his Gennad Swordmaster abilities.
Yeah. So to wrap up, Andrew, you've given us a lot of your time. We wanted to end on some rapid fire questions. And we didn't share these questions with you because we want just your gut reaction. Don't think about them, just answer. You cool with that?
Okay.
All righty. So first up, your favorite Dune book?
Dune Messiah. No question. Lapsu. I love it as an epilogue to the massive events. And I also love the conspiracy stuff. And again, introduced the Talaxi. They're one of my favorite things. I'm a big fan of Romulans and Star Trek. All the really manipulative, nasty, unpleasant, despicable. I'm all over that. So yeah, Messiah is absolutely definitely my favorite.
Okay, good answer. How about favorite character? Go.
Oh, Princess Irulan.
Oh, okay.
Hell yeah.
No question. Would have been Jessica because she does amazing things. But I tend to be a big fan of the characters you don't know much about. So while she was rather painfully underused in the Lynch movie, the sci-fi miniseries, I love that she became a sort of power broker. And I think she's been more used in some of the things like the Paul of Dune novel. She's got more of an active part because we're more seeing what she does. But thinking, someone who's basically written all the histories of Dune and someone who's been almost traded in marriage, but she also trained in the Bene Gesserit, so she's part of the sisterhood. But what fingers and how she takes part in the conspiracy, but also is slightly apart from things as well. And there's so many interests. She's one of those characters. What inspires me with her is that there is so much we don't know about her. But it's those unsung characters, the little ones that are always far more interesting because they've just got that. What were they all about?
Yeah.
That's why I love Esmar Tuik. Like, that's why I love the smuggler. I like the Tuiks. Like, they're cool.
Yeah.
And, you know, you only see so much.
That's such a great answer. But let's narrow it down a bit, Andrew. Who's your favorite character with prescient abilities? Your favorite prescient being in Dune?
Oh. Well, that narrows the field somewhat. But quite probably Edric the Navigator.
Okay.
Because again, I'm a big fan of all the guild and all that stuff. It's fascinating.
Okay. What about this favorite Gola?
Oh, okay. Duncan Idaho, and then you say which one?
Right.
It's so clear that you're such a huge fan. And in fact, just to wrap up, there, we talked earlier about how there really is no better time than now to be a Dune fan. You know, Dune is exploding in pop culture. I'm curious, are there things that you're looking forward to? Obviously, the part two of the movie and other things that are in production, but are there Dune adaptations that you hope we see?
Oh, God, everything and all of it. I want more. I mean, obviously, with Dune Messiah being my favorite book, I am desperately looking forward to hope that we get to see that. Fingers crossed that we do get to see more. I hope we don't end up with, when it comes to the Chronicles of Narnia, this is a bit of a sidestep, but bear with me. My favorite book in that series is The Magician's Nephew, because I love all the be done. But because they always want to get all the kids' ones done out in order, because the child actors grow up too quickly, right. It's always the one that's treated as like, we'll do it last. And the franchises never last long enough to get to it. So I'm always frustrated when you see a new Chronicles of Narnia. Yeah, that won't get to my favorite one. So I'm really hoping, I love the sci-fi miniseries doing Dune Messiah. So we've had that one in there. But yeah, just more Dune. It's just all good. So I mean, and it's lovely to be in a, when something you're a big fan of has exploded and not just done a film that, say, people have gone, oh yeah, that was all right. They've, wow, you know, critics have loved the new movie. You know, people who have not seen Dune before have loved the new movie. And it's nice to be part of something that's got, you know, this big momentum to it and think, yeah, it's great. Everyone knows. That's brilliant. So just more of it, really. I mean, we're seeing big adaptations. There are more and more games. There's board games. There's some.
Yeah.
Obviously, we're doing more role playing things. I mean, in one sense, I want to see more of our stuff coming out.
Yeah.
Because we've so much stuff to share. We have got in process, we've got about 3 or 4 accessory things coming out. We've box set. We've got about 2 or 3. There's one book in editing, one book in writing. No, one book in layout, one book in editing, one book in writing at the moment. So, and then we've got another couple of things we've already agreed, and then we'll be looking to you know, to get some more books agreed. So we have got so much on the way.
Damn it, Andrew, my bank account can't take it. I'm going to buy everything. I haven't even told Abu this, but I bought him some Sands of Arrakis dice, one of the dice set.
Wow.
And I'm going to give it to him at some point next time I see you, buddy. But there's like, because you have Sands, Sand and Dust is like an Arrakis based like expansion to the tool set book that's coming out soon.
Well, it's already out in England, but it hasn't got over to America quite yet. I think the distribution chain, the ship got to us first, and so we released. We're trying, I think, a bit later to hold on to some things and release all at the same time. But I think all the pre-order people got their copies. And what we've done with that, it comes back to what you're saying about the canon and how we create, how we make this world work when it's so vast. What I did was take a leaf out of the One Ring role-playing game, which, if you know, obviously, I do a lot of work with Cubicle 7 when they did that one. And they took the approach of going, we'll just do, in the basic book, they just had Mirkwood, the Misty Mountains, and the Shire. So if you're an elf, you're an elf from Mirkwood. If you're a dwarf, it's a dwarf of the Misty Mountains. And as they've expanded the game, they've added the Rivendell source book to let you do Noldor elves. They've added the Lorien elves in another one. They've added different dwarves. And Rohan warriors came out in their own source book. So we're gradually moving out from there. So we took the view that to start with, well, it's called Dune for a reason. So we start with Arrakis because there is so much going on. People say, oh, it's just sand. There is so much stuff going on that planet. So it's that all that adventure is in there, you know, and there's Fremen, there's all kinds of, so if you're playing a Fremen, this is also the book you want, because we go into all of the detail on that. And we'll be trying to expand all these other player counts like the Bene Gesserit and all kinds of things as we go through the book. And gradually we'll be expanding out of that. So our next few books will then be taking off planet into new places and new arenas and things. Because if we give you the entire universe in the book, then you're going to go, what do we do with it? So Arrakis gives that focus. It's the planet you see in the movie. It's the planet you see in the books most often. It's the easiest one to get hold of and go, right, I get a grip on this setting.
That's amazing. I mean, talking to you has now got me thinking how many friends and family I can rope into a game, you know, like how do I convince people to get into this like 100-hour campaign with me? Because it's clear you're so passionate about it, about the game, about both Dune and about just RPG games in general. Yeah. It's these two worlds that you love so much, and that's been obvious just talking to you.
No, I quite proudly geek out about these. It's awesome.
Well, you've been super generous with your time, Andrew, and we don't want to take up much more. To wrap up, is there anything you want to tell our audience, whether it's about Dune Imperium, the game, or just any shout outs you want to give just to wrap up today?
Well, as before, I kind of got a big shout out to all of my team and Sam Webb, who's our head of role playing, who's been an amazing backup for everything we've done. And check out the stuff, check out the website, the forums. We've got our own Discord chat now. So there's loads of conversations going on about all the Modiphius lines, so Star Trek, Conan, Infinity, Act of Cthulhu coming out. I mean, it amazes me how much stuff Modiphius manages to produce. They've got a huge team that does some amazing work. And keep an eye out for the Dune thing. We've got, you know, we've just released the pre-order for the Imperial Edition, the amazing, amazing handmade copy. It's so rare, I don't get one.
Oh,
it'd usually be things I'd go, yeah, oh, I want a copy of all of those. Yeah. This one, no.
Wow.
But yeah, Denis Villeneuve gets one.
Hello.
Yeah,
that's
the level for me. Yeah, these things. But it's amazing, gorgeous. I just see one of those go, oh, one. And we've also got some more big news coming up. We've got a big podcast we're going to do where we're going to unveil the next product in a bit more detail, which is our Agents of Dune box set, which I think we've announced. And we have some more books and things on the way that coming up. So, yeah, lots more Dune news on the way and lots of cool stuff. You know, we really can't get it out fast enough, frankly. Not only for ourselves wanting to show you this cool stuff, but also production out, because it's been really popular and it's great to be able to supply this need that people got. I want more Dune. It's like, well, we are more than happy to provide. And of course, we'll be also supplementing with loads more PDF adventures as well. So it's very important just to try and help people out with more adventures, because the more we produce, the more it gives people a handle on what they can play in Dune and how they can get started. And once you've got going with it, you know, you're away. Yeah, sort of thing.
That's amazing. Well, Andrew, thank you so much for your time. This was an absolute treat.
Absolutely. All right.
Take care,
guys.
Thanks, Andrew. Take care, bud.
Have a go.
Okay. Well, that was our interview with the fine folks over at Modiphius. You know, looking at that conversation, Abu, obviously, I think we both had a blast. Andy and Chris were both really clearly comfortable on mic, and
yeah,
awesome that they took that time. Looking back at the conversation, maybe what was something that kind of jumped out at you as particularly interesting as we kind of wrap up?
You know, I liked overall that they were as big Dune nerds as we are.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I remember you and I before, when we were prepping for the interview, weren't quite sure how nerdy to get, right? Like,
yeah,
was this just a job for these guys, or are these guys like true hardcore Dune fans?
Right.
And it turns out it was the latter.
Yeah.
Which was fun. It made that conversation so easy, made that whole interview so much fun, because we were all talking on the same level. And to answer your question, I think the thing that really stuck out to me from that conversation is when they talked about this idea of choice. Like, you and I obviously aren't big D&D RPG gamers. I've played the occasional game over the years with friends, but I've never committed to like a campaign.
Right.
And what I really enjoyed hearing was how this rule book, this RPG book that Modiphius has created, is not rules you must follow and memorize and adhere to. They're just guardrails.
Right.
The whole point of an RPG game, as Andrew explained to us, is to guide you loosely on an adventure and help you step into a world and a universe. But then the details and the story, that's up to you. You fill that part out, and you can make it as wacky as you want.
Yeah.
So that's the part that really stuck with me, was just how cognizant they were as game makers that we can't turn this into too much of an on-rails experience.
Right,
there has to be built-in flexibility for the player to really take this in directions and make it their own.
Yeah, like they were talking about this book, this core rule book is a tool, like a tool in the toolkit that people can use to craft their adventures. And tools aren't limiting. Like just because you have a hammer doesn't mean you have to use the hammer, you know? I loved Andrew's responses to, you know, we were challenging him. We were like, you know, Duncan, Idaho, really? 6 out of 8 for charm? But he's right that like the numbers that you are given, well, those are just suggestions for maybe a snapshot in time. And if you decide to run your campaign a little bit later in the timeline, well, maybe Paul's stats after living with the Fremen for 2 years have gone up.
Yeah.
And that's totally allowed. You can do anything you want. It's exactly, it's meant to be kind of a springboard. And I also really wanted, also really quickly wanted to say that Chris and Andrew were both passionate about this. I think there's that fear whenever I see an officially licensed game that it's just two faceless corporations that are like trying to like wring money out of the fans. But to see a passionate game maker who loves Dune, and as Chris says, right, he only takes it if he's interested in it.
Right.
That's huge. And honestly, really put me at ease because I didn't have to feel like I was gatekeeping or testing, do you deserve this honor? No, it's just people passionate about Dune who are creating more opportunities for people to explore Dune in their own ways. It's so cool.
Right. Well, Leah, what about you? Was there something from that interview that stuck out to you as well as we debrief here?
So as we've covered way too much in this podcast, I have a degree in art and it's working out great. It's working out.
Okay. Got it.
Going to preempt that question every time. But of course, I bought the books almost exclusively for the art. And so obviously I was curious about the art and I loved the sort of insight that we honestly, I personally didn't expect Andy to get that in depth in talking about that process of, you know, seeing the lookbooks for the movie before the movie was out. Like, what a cool thing that is, that they were able to kind of craft the aesthetic of the game in conjunction with Legendary and Villeneuve and making sure that it looks like it's the same universe, because this is going to be the thing that most people have most recently seen.
Yeah.
So fascinating. Because again, as Andy pointed out, having it a separate experience, this is not Villeneuve's Dune. This is a separate and equally cool and beautiful and vibrant and exciting looking adventure. And I love the attention to detail and the art. It's just unbelievable. So that was really fun to hear about. And was one of the burning questions in my mind pretty much the whole time. But, you know, that's you and me, Abu. Those are the things that kind of jumped out to us. I would say, hey, if you're listening to this episode, what did you think about the conversation? What kind of follow-up questions did you have? Or what jumped out at you? We'd love to hear from you. GamjaBarPodcast@gmail.com or our Discord if you're one of our little patrons.
That's right. Especially, I'd love to hear from sort of longtime veteran D&D RPG gamers.
Totally.
Right? Like, we can't look at this book and analyze it critically from that perspective, from like a gameplay perspective. We can just come at it from a Dune lore fandom world. So I'd love to get some emails from listeners who got the book or have even played a few campaigns with friends.
Yeah.
Like, tell us about that. That would be awesome. And you're totally right, Leo, that the conversation with Chris and Andrew was so much fun, and they have some announcements in the works. So keep an eye out on Modiphius and some of the things they'll be releasing soon that are Dune related, but I'm sure we'll have a conversation with them again in the future. So hit us up, dear listener. What should we ask them next time we talk to them? And what were your own campaigns and experiences like with the book?
Tell us your own campaigns. I am so thirsty for campaign details.
Yeah.
How many people did you bang? Tell me.
Yes. I was going to say, thirsty in the sense like, tell us your thirstiest campaigns.
Water is a precious resource.
Make us sweat.
Sleep your way to the top.
GoundryBarPodcast@gmail.com. Send us all your fan fiction, y'all. That might be a dangerous thing to ask people to do.
Oh my God. Flooded with
We're going to get fucking novels.
Yeah.
Well, friends, there is no real ending. It's just the place where you stop the recording. But this podcast is always one step beyond logic, so help spread the word of Muad'Dib and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. And be sure to check out the other shows on the Lore Party Podcast Network on loreparty.com. You can also follow us on Twitter and Instagram at lore_party. Thank you so much for listening, and remember, he who controls the podcast controls the universe. We'll see you on the Golden Path. That's right. And before we get to that interview, as always, Leo.
Right.
Oh, hold on. My sister's making a milkshake.
Something, something, milkshake song. Something, something. Milkshake song.